Okay, so this is the last Shlomo Perek. Half of Melachim Aleph is Shlomo. After that, it moves on. But this is the last Shlomo Perek. So V'hamelech Shlomo av nashim nachriot rabot v'edbat paro moaviot amaniot adomiot sidoniot chitayot chitiyot. Right. So now we head to his downfall. After all of that, after all the beginnings of his downfall that we saw already in Paragimel when he married Bat Paro, and as it comes up again here, right? Bat Paro is she's the one who begins it all. She's the one who ends it all. But he loves all these foreign women, which, again, the Mefarshim debate, are they converted? But even if they converted, as the Rambam noted, they converted.
The order is wrong. You notice? It should be Nashim Nochiot, Moviot, Amoniot, Ve'et Bat Paro. Ve'et Paro is stuck in the middle somewhere.
Yes. And I think that draws attention to it, right? But it's a lot of women and Bat Paro. Like, she's equivalent. Like, this is the beginning of everything. This is the end of everything. This was everything to him. That really is what led to his downfall. And again, we saw this already at the beginning, that this was going to be the harbinger of the problems. And the Rambam says, right, even if he converted them, they weren't real conversions. These were people who converted for political reasons. So they're not sincere. So even if they are technically Jews, obviously you have 1,000 wives from different nations who aren't committing to Judaism. The real reason, this is just going to be a disaster. And then the pasuk goes on. Min hagoyim asher amar Adonai b'nei Yisrael lo savo vahem v'hem lo yivu vachem achen yatu et levavchem acharei Elohim v'hem davak Shlomo lava. It's not just random women. It was the women that God said don't marry. And there's a machlokas in general that only applies to the seven nations or to other nations, but it seems to apply at least to the seven nations. And there, I mean, the halachic question of does the araisa of intermarriage apply to the seven nations or other nations as well? But whoever it is, that's who he's marrying, right? He's marrying these, and he's marrying... And the Torah here just, takes... The Navi really... It's very heavy-handed in its criticism here. And they turned his heart after other gods. Vahilo, Nashim, Sarot, Shvameot, Ufalakshim, Shloshmeot, Vatu, Nashavet, Libo. Why was this? Because he had 1,000 wives. He had 700... wives and 300 concubines, and that was it. Vahi leidzik, not Shlomo. And now this is what the Mefarshim note. It's not that he was, when he was at his strength, you only saw the beginnings of it. But where this really became manifest was as he got old. Because as he got old, then he started failing, his health started failing, his strength started failing, and now his wives had a greater sway on him. So he tuit levavo acharei Elohim acherim. They turned him to other gods. Now, the simple pshat of the pasuk is that he worshipped Avodah Zarah. The problem is the second half of the pasuk, which is Loha Yalev Avo Shalem Yom Adonai Elohav Kilavav David Aviv, and his heart wasn't full with God like David his father, which Chazal pick up on, and most of the Mefarshim actually agree, even the Mefarshim pshat, who don't always agree with Chazal, do hear that he didn't actually worship Avodah Zarah. And the reason they say that is because that is the understatement of the century. Right, to say he worshipped idols and he wasn't as close to God as David. Right, as they say, as the Chazal note, what do you mean he wasn't as close to God as David? He was a public idol worshipper, if you read the Psukim literally. That doesn't make any sense. And therefore they say, no, it can't be. He didn't actually worship Avodah Zarah. So the Mefarshim try to explain what does he mean. So some say he studied foreign. He studied these foreign cultures, but it seems to be more than that. We see in Pasuk Zion that he builds. We'll see it in just a second. He builds temples for the idols.
It's unbelievable.
So again, if you take the pasuk literally, it sounds like he is building idolatrous temples. But again, if that's what he's doing, so what do you mean he's not as good as David? He's terrible. He's atrocious. And there is a day in Chazal like this, right? The Gemara says that the Mishnah says that there's three kings who don't have a chelek in Olam Haba. We've mentioned this before, and the Gemara said, and there might have been a fourth. They tried to include Shlomo. They say Shlomo also had no chelek in Olam Haba. So there is a position in Chazal that really thought Shlomo was terrible, terrible, terrible. But if you want to take it not that way and say, okay, he didn't actually. So what Chazal say is it means that his wives worshipped Avodah Zarah and he didn't stop them. Now that sounds not so terrible, but the truth is, that's what Alex Israel points out in his book, You understand why this is called going after Avodah Zarah, because what does it mean he built idolatrous temples? He didn't, according to Chazal, he didn't build it. But the answer is, of course he did. I mean, he didn't personally build them, but if the queen, one of his many queens, says, I want to build an idolatrous temple to Chemosh, and he lets her, it's on his checkbook, everybody knows it's the queen building it, so even if he doesn't do it, it's legitimate to say that he's involved. And the Mefarshim note, Aziv Neshlamo, he built the idolatrous temples. Yeah, he built it the same way he built the Beit HaMikdash. He didn't build the Beit HaMikdash with his own hands. It was under his auspices. It was under his direction. And he said, imagine the confusion when the Jews come to Yerushalayim, which had become the hub of Avodat Hashem in the world. He built the Beit HaMikdash, and there's all these idolatrous temples. And people ask, well, who built those? Oh, the queen. The queen's built it, and the king signed off on it. It's going to create a real religious confusion. So even if he didn't worship Avodah Zarah, as Chazal say, it's still bad. That's why the Pesukim are so critical. And he followed. Again,
he says that he did worship.
Right, so again, you read the Pesukim simply, it sounds like he's open to Avodah Zarah. And again, there is that position in Chazal that really want to ascribe to him the worst of the worst. What really pushes most of the Mefarshim to say that he didn't actually worship Avodah Zarah was that below Hayalav Shalem Im Hashem Alokav Kilavad David Avid, because it just seems like an understatement if what he's doing is public idolatry. And that's why they say he was following their culture, he was allowing his wives to build idolatrous temples. But it's bad. Whatever, right? One way or the other, it's bad. It's either bad or terrible, but it's bad. Right? Vayashlamo Rabbeinu Adonai Velo Mileachar Adonai Ki David Aviv. Again, he did what was evil in God's eyes, and again, he didn't follow God, Hashem fully, which again is where the Mefarshim say, you're right, it sounds like he's worshipping Avodah Zarah, but then the Pesukim keep emphasizing, he wasn't as with God as his father David. Right? Again, right. If that's what it means, he's over Avodah Zarah. That's not that's the least of his problems, that he's not as perfect as David. And then it continues. Aziv Neshlamo Bamalich Chemosh Shikutz Moav Bahara Shalpanei Yerushalayim Ulamolech Shikutz Bnei Amon. He builds a mizbeach to Chemosh, which is the right disgusting gods of Moav, on the mountain facing Yerushalayim, and an idolatrous temple to Molech. V'chein asal lechol nashav anachriot maktirah mizabchot leElohein. But then, in Pasuk Tet, and Pasuk Chet rather, and that's where you sort of hear this notion, maybe it's not him worshipping himself, it's this is what he did for all his non-Jewish wives who were sacrificing and bringing incense to their gods. And that supports Chazal's notion that it doesn't mean he's an active idol worshiper, it means that he's been dragged into supporting this idolatrous, you know, enterprise. And God gets angry at Shlomo, and the Rambam notes in the Mor Nevuchim that the only time that really God is described as anger is Avodah Zarah, because it has the, you know, idolatry has the adulterous connotation. It's the ultimate treason of the relationship with God. And here the way the pasuk presents it is that he takes it personally. It's not just he rebelled against God. He rebelled against God who appeared to him. He's had Nevuah twice.
Yeah, that's right. Right? God spoke to him.
Yeah, you know, and the Pesukim are like, this is really bad. Really, really bad. Now, technically three times. So why is it two is, you know, the Pesukim try to figure out. It seems to be that one is just an expansion of the other, right? One is regarding the wisdom, and one is the Beit HaMikdash. One was before, one was after, right? One was in advance of the Beit HaMikdash, one was, you know, afterwards.
God told him, if you're going to go in my ways, I was going to go. If you
exactly.
Don't go,
and that's the emphasis here, right? It's not just, I spoke to you twice. I told you what's going to happen, right? This is what I warned you about. This, right? This. I told you about it, and now you're doing it, and now there's going to be consequences.
Maybe it's Alzheimer's. Maybe it's Alzheimer's or something, a sickness. It's unbelievable, actually. It's not to understand. And if he was wise, he wasn't a stupid man. So well, maybe he was sick.
Well, I mean, he's definitely old and weaker, but this is what Chazal says, is that he thought he was too smart, Right? He thought he was so smart that he couldn't.
This time they didn't know about Alzheimer's or dementia. Maybe this is.
Yeah, but you know, but honestly, it doesn't even.
If you have Alzheimer's or dementia, you decrease. Like you can't be.
He doesn't realize. He didn't realize. Or maybe, I don't
right, but it, I mean, God seems to hold him culpable. I mean,
from those words.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that even the smartest person, the problem, the way Chazal says it, it's not that he's losing his mind. Is that he's getting old? He's getting weaker, and he's 1,000 wives. Or idolaters.
500, it's a lot. You can't.
I'm saying, you think about being surrounded by 1,000.
The problem is not the wives.
No,
the problem is not the mother-in-laws.
No, nobody knows. The mother-in-laws weren't around. Nobody. But seriously, they were all like that. Was
yeah, and he's saying, you know,
the fuck all going around.
Yeah.
Between and it's, the wives too.
You know, and this is just. You know, it's just this. It's overwhelming what's going on. He said, this is what I told you. This is it. I told you, don't worship idols. Don't do this. This. And now, you're doing it. Right? Like, that's it. I'm ripping your kingdom away from you and I'm giving it to your servant. But I won't rip it from you, I'll rip it from your son, because of David. Now, this pasuk, I've got to say, I think proves the thesis we started with when we opened Malachim. Right? Remember we started Malachim, we said, why does Malachim start with David and not with Shlomo? Because it's not about Shlomo, it's about David's dynasty. And Shlomo happens to be the manifestation of David's dynasty. And you see that pretty clearly here, because Shlomo sinned, and it's going to be, the kingdom is going to be partially ripped away, but it can't be ripped from Shlomo, not because of Shlomo, but because of David. But Rechavim is also David's grandchild. But at some level, Shlomo is simply, I think, he's just David incarnate, right? He's not religiously, but the way Hashem promised him, to David, you won't build the Beit HaMikdash because you don't have peace in your days. But your son will have peace and he'll be able to build the Beit HaMikdash. If Hashem takes that away from Shlomo now, then he's taking away his promise from David. Shlomo is protected. Despite it all, he's personally protected because he has to fulfill Hashem's promise to David that he has a son who has a peaceful kingdom and can have the Beit HaMikdash with peace. And if he takes it away from Shlomo, but this just proves that Shlomo is, for all intents and purposes, not important because he's Shlomo. He's important because he's David's son. He's the son who is able to fulfill David's promise. And it's ironic because he's the one who messes up and he gets to keep his kingdom because God can't take it away from him because of David. But his son will. He said, Rak, et kol ha-mamlacha lo ekra, shevet achad etein levnecha, leman David avdi, leman Yerushalayim asher bacharti. But I can't take it away totally. He said, David, I promise you'll have a son who will have a kingdom, full and peaceful. So I have to leave you with your full kingdom. And I promised David that he would have the dynasty forever. So unlike Shaul, I can't take away the kingdom entirely. All I can do is weaken it. And he says, for two reasons. For David, because I promised David that. That's understandable. Or that at least I understand the words. Laman Yushalayim Asher Bacharti, that is, and this is really the fulfillment of what David had said. David said, I want to build a Beit HaMikdash for you. I want a city for you. I want a dynasty for you. And Hashem said, once I agreed to David that my legacy would be tied up with his legacy, Yerushalayim's stature depends on there being some Malchut Beit David left. And therefore, because of David and because of the promise I made of how my legacy would be continued in this world, I have to give you something. And therefore, I will only partially tear it away from you.
So Yerushalayim stayed with David?
With David, right? That stays with Yehuda and Binyamin. Everything else gets ripped away. Right? He gets a small dynasty. He gets the small kingdom of Yehuda. But
includes Yerushalayim.
But includes Yerushalayim. Vayakam Adonai Satan leShlomo et Hadad Adomi Mizera HaMelech uBedom. And then a Satan arises for Shlomo. Hadad from Edom. Now, this is, as they point out here in Dat Mikra, an explicit response to Perek Hay. When Shlomo was at its height, Shlomo had said to Chiram Melech Tzor, Va'ata, this is Perek Hay Pasuk Yud Ched, was Va'ata, Hiniach Hashem Elokai Li Misaviv, Ein Satan vein Pegara. I've been left without any satan, meaning any impediments, and now without any pegara, without any blemish, any punishment, any anything. Shlomo is going to keep his melucha, and the truth is that we're going to see that these satans, right, these impediments that he has, are going to be relatively minor. Like, he really is going to keep his kingdom. Hashem promised he's going to keep his kingdom. So why, if these annoyances for Shlomo are minor, does the pasuk present them? Because what it's emphasizing is, while he was a tzaddik, he had no satan. Now he's not a tzaddik, so now he has satan. He has impediments. God is now going to harm his malchus. Not a lot, because he promised he wouldn't. But that perfection that he was promised, he can't have anymore, because now he's messed up. So the first one is Hadad, who was from Edom.
Esav.
What? Yeah, from Edom. Who was Esav. Now, what was the story with him? So the pasuk tells you, "Vahi b'hiot David Edom ba'alot Yoav sarat tzava lekaber chalim v'yach kol zachar be'edom." That when David was in Edom, so Yoav had come to bury the dead bodies. Right, this was sort of an incredible act that David buried the. So it's a machloket, right? One possibility is he was burying Jewish dead after a war. But some of Farshim say that this was actually the Jews, when they would finish a war, would actually bury their enemies. They would go back and they would bury the enemy soldiers. But while he was doing that, which isn't very impressive, but in the meantime, when Yoav was there, he killed all the males, meaning all the warriors that were there. Vayivrach Hadad hu v'anashim adomiyim me'avdei avir v'itol avo mitzrayim v'hadad nar katan. So Hadad had run with his men to Mitzrayim, and Hadad was a child at the time. Vayikumu mimidyan, uvayavo paran, vayichu anashim imam peran, vayavo Mitzrayim el paro melch Mitzrayim, v'yitan lo vayit alechem, amar lo v'erth natan lo. So he ran, and he came with men, and Paro gave him a house, and gave him food, and gave him some land. Vayimtza Hadad chein b'nei faro me'od, v'yitan lo ishad achod ishto, achod tach b'neis hagvira. And he found favor in Paro's eyes, and he gave him married him.
He became his brother, Paro's brother-in-law.
Now, the amazing thing, there's a few amazing things about this story, but the first thing is that this is the biggest slap in the face ever to Shlomo. And this is going to be the beginning, because everything started and ended for Shlomo with his attempts to ingratiate himself in Mitzrayim with Bat Paro. And now all his troubles are going to come from Mitzrayim. Right? He thought, meaning everything fell through because he had married Bat Paro. That's what started it all, because he wanted to be part of Mitzrayim. And now
he's basically his uncle.
It's
Hadad is his uncle, because he married his mother's sister.
Right. I mean, there's multiple Paros going on in this story, as we'll see, but maybe. Well, you know, they're somehow now related. But this is a slap in the face. Like, Shlomo, you know, it's God, like, really sending him a message. Like, your problems, not only you're going to have problems now, you're going to have problems from Mitzrayim. You thought that marrying Bat Paro would have solved all your problems? No, this is now the beginning. Mitzrayim, nothing is assured now. Even more fascinating, and this is pointed out by I forget who pointed out the first time. Whatever. Alex Israel quotes it from an article that goes through these. The Navi here seems to be being ruthless to Shlomo. Because who does Hadad sound like? Hadad sounds like Moshe. Moshe, right, runs away, gets protected by someone, marries the guy's daughter, right? And then he comes back. And he's raised. Right? Someone's coming out to kill him. He runs away. He gets saved. He marries. He is taken care of by a woman in Paro's house. He's raised in the royal palace of Paro while running away, while his people are being killed. Vadad shama v'Yisrael kishachav David imavodav v'chemet Yoav sarat zavav v'yomer Hadad al parosh alchein ve'elech alartzi. And then he says, he hears that his enemies have died, so he says, please let me go, which is what Moshe does, right? He runs away away from Paro, and then he hears Hashem says, all the people amavakshim et nafshecha have died, it's time for you to go back to Mitzrayim. But what's the problem? Eretz Yisrael is Mitzrayim. Shlomo is Paro. and Paro is Yitro. Right? The Torah is going out of its way to say, not only is Mitzrayim going to be your downfall, but you have become Paro. Right? You have become Paro. You are the one they're fleeing from. You are the one who wants to kill this guy. He's the one running to his father-in-law, who's taking him care of himself. He's going to be raised in the palace of Paro. He's Moshe. Right? He raised in the palace of Paro. He runs away, waits till the people who want to kill him die, and then he comes back to cause trouble. But he's causing trouble to you, to the king, Shlomo. And he's going out of its way to say that Shlomo had gotten so bad that he is the new Paro figure. Right? So much had he integrated himself with Bat Paro that he just is Paro now. Right? It's striking. It jumps at you. And it says, Vayomer lo Faro, ki ma ata chaser imi, v'incha mevakesh lelechet arzecha. Vayomer lo, ki shalech teshalcheini. He said, what are you missing here? Why do you want to go back? And he says, no, just let me go back. And he goes back. Vayakom Elohim lo Satan et rezon bel yadasha barach mirad ad ezer melech to ba'adonav. So that's problem one, is Hadad. We don't really know what Hadad does to him. And that's what Alex Israel's point is that it doesn't seem like Hadad does much to him. It just sounds like he was a little bit of a bother because he can't really take away his melucha, but the Torah is going out of its way anyways to emphasize that he is a satan.
Satan doesn't come here.
What?
He also doesn't say that he went.
Well, he doesn't do anything, right?
He wants to go.
Right, and that's why Alex Israel said the Navi seems to be overemphasizing what Hadad did to draw attention to the fact that something happened. Simply to remind you that you're right, he basically kept his malchus, but perfection... The fact that he could say that I have no satan, no impediment, is only because he was a tzaddik. If he isn't a tzaddik, there will be problems. There may not be big problems because he's protected by David, but there will be problems. There will be consequences. The second one is Vayakem Elohim lo satan et rezon bel yadash barach mirad ad ezer melech tova adonav. So the second one was rezon ben el yadah, who'd run away from Hadad Ezer, the king of Tova. Vayigvot elav anashim vayisar gedud barog David otam. He had gone and he had also fled David and he'd gone to be king in Damascus. But he said, "Tan Israel, call you Meshlomo." And he was a problem for Israel all the days of Shlomo, which again is not really true. I mean, all the days of Shlomo wasn't. Right, the end of the days. But, he caused pain and he hated the Jews, and he was king on Aram. Now we'll start this. At this point, the one thing I'll say this now. The next half of the Perek really talks about Yeravam, which is going to be the real downfall, which is right his rebellion from within. That's the person who's going to rip away the malchus from him. But just
did he not have the vineyard?
What?
Was this not the guy that had the vineyard?
No, that's
Navala Karmeli.
Yeah, that's Navala Karmeli with Achav. The Reb Rabinovich has a fascinating article where he notes the Gemara has this very weird story in Gittin of how Shlomo eventually is outsmarted by the maybe I should even bring it. Maybe I'll print it out for next week. Well, I'll print that out for next week. But how there's wild, fantastic.
Well, from Gemara?
What?
From a Gemara? We have.
Yeah, I know, but it's long, so like, you know. But But he pointed, there's this long, wild Gemara of Shlomo, his malchus being taken away from him by the Satan, right? And he notes that story seems to be Chazal's extended interpretation of this story. Like, how did Shlomo go wrong? What were his crimes? What did it lead to? And they're playing off of this satan. It's a brilliant analysis they got. So let's just start Yeravam in the meantime. And he says, the third big one, and we'll have to come back to Yeravam because this is the beginning of Malchut Yisrael. But Yeravam ben Avad Efratim in Hatzreida, v'shem imot shruah yishal manah, evit lo Shlomo v'yarem yad b'melech. So Yeravam is from Efrat, and his mother is a widow. And he's the servant of Shlomo, and he rebels against the king.
Shlomo.
So he rebelled against him because he built the Milo. Now, what is the Milo? Which his father had destroyed. Now, that sounds nice. Like, you know, he built up something. Shlomo was always building. So there's three positions in the Mefarshim of what this Milo is. So one is that it's a palace of sorts for Bat Paro, which blocks everybody, right? That it blocks people from getting to the king. And that Yeravam is complaining, like, David had destroyed it. What do you mean David destroyed it? David had an open door policy to the palace, and now you're building all these structures. It sounds really nice, but no one can get in. Right? Or Chazal say it was a big open space where the Olei Regalim used to gather. Now that means, right, the first one is saying that at some level they're criticizing politically, right? He built something for Bat Paro, and it prevented people from coming in to the palace. They're criticizing him, you know, judicially, his ability to relate to the people. Or he's preventing them from gathering for the Olei Regalim, or it's something that allowed them to get into that connected the Har HaBayit, but he's preventing people from being Olei Regel. I mean, Chazal see here that Yeravam begins a critique politically and religiously, that you're holding people, you're building these fancy structures for what power, you're preventing us from coming in for judgment, you're preventing us from gathering in the time of Aliyah L'Regel, right? Everything that you claim to build up politically and religiously, the common person can't come. Sure, there's a Beit HaMikdash, but what are Chazal saying by saying there used to be a place where the average person collected Olei Regel and now they can't? That Shlomo is building these big structures, this religious reform, but the average person has nowhere to stand when they come Olei Regel. Like, the average person has no place. And sure, he has these relationships with Bat Paro, and you know, he has this strong treaties, but nobody can move because there's these imposing structures of Bat Paro. And sure, he's the smartest of all men, but there used to be the other position, Chazal, there used to be an easy way, right? That's what this was blocking, to go into the palace and approach the king. And now there's all these structures, right? It's all built up, and no one can approach the king anymore. So the average person isn't benefiting from Shlomo's greatness. So it's this combination of religious and political criticism mixed with populism, right? And he comes and he says, "What are you doing?" Now, Yeravam had critiqued him, had criticized him. So what did Shlomo do?
He hired him,
right? He brought him in. He saw he was capable, and okay, a little bit of chutzpah, but that's a good person to get into the palace. So when he gets hired by the king, as he's leaving, so it's machloket, if this is right before he becomes king, or this is already before he even gets hired, right? And this is what gives him the chutzpah to even criticize Shlomo, is that Achia HaShiloni, the Navi, finds him, and he finds him in the field, and he's covered in a salma. Now, why Salma? So really, normally we would say Beged. Why Salma? So it seems to be a play on words, that it's Shlomo. Shlomo. Salma. And he takes it and he rips it. And it's either Yeravam's clothing, or this is Achia's clothing. It's not clear which ones it is. And this is what happened with Shmuel and Shaul also. When he lost it, Shmuel
ripped it.
Right, same thing. Rips it, right? Rips the garment and says, the kingdom's going to be ripped from you. But Yomer L'Ravam, Kach Lecha Asarach Kreim, Kichom Aradonai L'Yisrael, Hineni Koreh Amamlacham Yashlomo V'tati Lecha Asarach Shvatim. Take 10 pieces, because you're getting 10 out of 12. Shvatim. Vashevet Achad Yelo L'man Avdi David. He'll have one shevet, meaning two, Binyamin and Yehuda together. U'man Yerushalayim Ma'ir Asher Bachardi Bamikol Shevtei Yisrael. And because he worshipped Avodah Zarah and he wasn't like David, but I won't take everything from him, because I'll allow him to be a Nasi during his life, right? Which it seems to be already downgraded, right? He's not a king anymore. But allow him to lead. I'll bow him to be the leader, which is normally a term for a Shavit leader, because he may think he's still the king, but really he's already lost it. It's just, for David, I'm allowing him to keep the kingdom, but his status, I'm demoting to Nasi. He only deserves part of the kingdom. Asher bachartei avdo shamar mitzvotei v'chukotei, because of David, I'm allowing him to keep it. But I'm going to give 10 shvatim to you. But I'm going to leave some with David, so he has something. But you, I'm going to make king with whatever you want, and you're going to be the king. If you listen, so then I'll make you like David. Okay, so we're going to have to come back to this next week, because I have to run. He's from Ephraim, which is important, right? Because Ephraim is...
Shaul. No.
What?
Shaul was from...
No, he's from Binyamin, but they're both from Yosef. That's the key, is that if ever there's someone who challenges Yehuda, it's always from Yosef. It's always from Rachel, meaning it's from Ephraim or from Binyamin. Usually, here, it's primarily Yosef. Shaul's from Binyamin, but it's from Rachel. Right, because that's the other branch of Israel.